completely natural to question what we see and hear. In fact, we should do it more often. The next chapter will reveal the results of the gratitude experiment I conducted to prove whether flipping the gratitude switch could really increase your happiness levels and contentment with your life. Spoiler alert, it really works. Chapter 2. Let's get science-y. Remember the Harris poll that reported 2/3 of us consider ourselves to be unhappy? When I undertook the task of writing this book, I knew I needed to present something that legitimized my beliefs about the power of gratitude and proved that gratitude could move the barometer on those 2/3 of us that the poll measured as unhappy. I thought, wouldn't it be great to find a way to measure someone's current happiness or unhappiness level at any given moment? And wouldn't it be even better if I could measure a happiness increase over time as a result of consistently flipping the gratitude switch? I thought if I could do that, then I could share with you some specific scientific data that proves everything we've talked about in this book so far to be absolutely real and true. This chapter is for the small percentage of you that have listened to the book up to this point and are still thinking, this all sounds good in theory, but is this actually something real? Okay, well, here is your proof. Putting on my scientist hat. I sought after volunteers to participate in a 4-week happiness experiment that included applying gratitude in their daily lives, keeping track of their experiences, and taking a weekly quiz. I wanted to see if the consistent use of conscious gratitude could increase levels of contentment, increase levels of life satisfaction, and increase levels of overall happiness. I obviously believe it can do all of that and much, much more, but I thought if I could measure it, then it would allow others, maybe even you, to take this formula for happiness more seriously. I purposely did not overwhelm the volunteers with the details regarding the flip formula, and I also left the phrase, flip the gratitude switch, out of the quizzes and instructions. I knew if I taught them about the principles before I started testing them, that the participants might give me the responses they thought I wanted. I needed them to remain as unbiased as possible. I simply instructed them to apply small amounts of gratitude during moments of frustration, to write down a few of their experiences, and take a weekly quiz. Nearly 100 people agreed to be a part of my little experiment. I knew this was a relatively small sample size, but I also thought that the number would be easy to manage and measure. Now, I'm not exactly the most science-y, I'm not exactly the most science-y guy out there, but this stuff is necessary to validate the ideas in this book. If you dislike quantitative studies, just skip ahead to the section titled The Results Are In. For those of you who love numbers and analytics and statistics, let's get science-y. The Happiness Quiz. The volunteers began their journey by taking a quiz. It was the same quiz they would be taking each week for the entire duration of the experiment. I started with the quiz because I needed a baseline from which to measure the decrease or increase in their happiness levels as the weeks progressed. I wanted to measure how happy they felt about things and about life in general before they learned about and applied gratitude. So I asked the participants, at least once a day, to make a conscious decision to feel and experience gratitude when a frustration arose. I instructed them, if you feel yourself getting frustrated, angry, hurt, annoyed, etc., simply find the silver lining, or what's awesome, embedded in the minor frustration, or embedded in the anger or the hurt, and then focus on being thankful just for a moment for the silver lining within that frustration. I asked them to write down at least one sentence at least once a day about the experience of consciously choosing gratitude during the moments of frustration. Once a week, I asked them to log in and log in on their own time to take the same quiz they'd taken at the beginning so I could compare answers and track progression. I felt that if I were breathing down their necks, they could feel resentment when taking the weekly quiz, which would have a negative impact on the quiz results, or at least cause the data to become skewed, so I let them take the quiz on their own time and at their own speed. By letting them take the quiz at their own pace and according to their own schedule, I reasoned that their results would contain more purity of measurement. The weekly quiz consisted of 40 questions that included 25 positive and 15 negative statements that each required a response. Negative statements were things like, I feel that I'm not especially in control of my life. An example of a positive statement was, I find it easy to smile. The statements were presented in random order each time, so the participants didn't sense a pattern of positive and negative trends. The participants were asked to respond to each statement using a 6-option spectrum that ranged from strongly disagree to strongly agree. If a person answered strongly agree in response to I find it easy to smile, it indicated that the individual had a higher level of happiness than someone who answered strongly disagree to that same prompt. Conversely, a response of strongly disagree to the prompt I feel that I am not especially in control of my life told me that this person felt that he or she was in control of his or her life. I obviously would record such a response as positive, indicating that this person likely possesses more happiness than someone who answered strongly agree to that same prompt. So how did I get the scores? I wanted to see if I could mathematically prove that for a small sample group, that the daily application of the flip formula, even with the test takers not fully understanding the information contained in this book, that it could in fact, on paper, prove that the application of gratitude improves happiness levels. Of those who initially agreed to take the quiz, roughly 20% did not participate once the experiment was underway. In other words, I never received a single quiz result from them. Another 20% only took one quiz. I threw out their responses because I had no way to measure an increase or decrease in the level of happiness through their application and activation of daily gratitude. Of the remaining participants, 56% took 2 quizzes, 19% took 3 quizzes, and 25% of the participants took at least 4 quizzes over 4 consecutive weeks. In order to quantitatively measure results, I turned the 6 possible responses into numerical values so that I could actually measure potential increases in the life contentment and in the happiness as a direct result of the daily application of gratitude I was asking them to implement. Here's how the point system looked. They would receive 1 point for the response strongly disagree. They would receive 2 points for the response moderately disagree. 3 points for slightly disagree, 4 points for slightly agree, 5 points for moderately agree, and 6 points for strongly agree. After I compiled all the quiz results, I took the 40 questions and divided them into negative statements and positive statements. I knew I'd have to measure the responses to the negative and positive statements separately because I'd have a different desired outcome for each of the sets of statements. In other words, I hoped the positive statements' responses would increase in the average score over the time of the experiment. And I hoped the negative statements' responses would decrease in numerical value as the experiment went along. If the numerical values that correlated to the responses decreased among the negative statements and increased among the positive statements, I would consider that statistical proof of gratitude improving the lives of my small sample group. To explain this further, let's take a look at a negative statement. At the beginning of week 1, before the application of gratitude began, if the respondent answered to the prompt, I feel that I'm not especially in control of my life, with slightly agree, it indicated that this person felt a little bit like he or she does not have much control over life. I gave this a numerical value of 4. In week 2 of the experiment, after participants had started tracking their gratitude experiences daily and flipping the gratitude switch daily, if that same individual responded to the same statement with slightly disagree, that person moved from a 4 to a 3. For the negative statements, that would be a statistical improvement. By the end of the experiment, if the daily, conscious application of gratitude took the respondent from an answer of slightly agree or a 4 to strongly disagree or a 1, it indicated that this person now feels completely in control of his or her life. What I ended up with then was a quantitative representation of an increase in the individual's happiness and contentment levels due to flipping the gratitude switch daily. All of the same reasoning applies to the positive statements with a few minor differences. An example of a positive statement from the quiz is, I feel that I have a personal mission in life. Let's say an individual taking the quiz responded with a slightly disagree or a value of 3 to this statement during week 1. In week 2, the person responded slightly agree, a value of 4 to that statement. In week 3, the response was moderately agree, which was a value of 5. And in the final week, he or she maybe responds with strongly agree, which has a value of 6 to that same original statement. Such an increase over time proved to me that the theory of the daily conscious application of gratitude at key strategic moments throughout the day does, in fact, increase one's happiness level and overall level of contentment with their life. Now that we understand how the quiz was structured, implemented, and scored, and measured, let's take a look at the results. Okay, everybody, pause for a second. I'm going to jump off script. If you just listened to all of that, first of all, high five, congratulations. That was a lot of science-y number stuff. Now, I really want to make sure you know why I did that. I truly felt that in order to take somebody who might be skeptical of this idea of gratitude improving one's life, I knew that I'd have to take that skeptic and give them quantitative proof that it really did work. So when I devised this whole experiment, I had no idea what the results would be. And as I share them here with you in a second, they were really truly astounding. So if you totally zoned out during that time about the number and statistical improvement and 4 to a value of 3 and blah, 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 then tune back in. Get up, do some jumping jacks, splash some water on your face, and get ready for this, because the results were in, and this was truly incredible. All right, here we go. The results are in. I imagined I would see a net increase in the happiness and contentment levels of those who participated, but there were some unexpected results that proved my theory even better than I'd hoped. With all numbers and results combined, the participants collectively saw an increase in happiness by a total of 12% by simply choosing to apply gratitude daily. They were 12% happier on paper than they'd been 4 weeks earlier, according to the responses to both the negative and positive prompts and how I scored them. This is where it gets interesting. I certainly did not expect each participant to be perfect in taking the quizzes, and certainly not in applying gratitude on a daily basis. It takes practice and a conscious application of the flip formula to develop that discipline, and I knew that. However, there were a few really fascinating occurrences. Everyone who volunteered started out with a desire to participate daily. Of course, there were some who only took one quiz, some who took two, a few who took 3 quizzes, and a group that took all 4 quizzes. In talking with participants, it turns out that if they remembered to regularly flip the gratitude switch, they would also remember to take the quiz. Here's what this means. Those who only took 2 quizzes only did the experiment for 2 weeks. The same goes for those who did 3 quizzes and 4 quizzes. The more quizzes they took, the more accurately I could track their increase in happiness level, because more quizzes meant they were more regularly engaging in the application of gratitude. After I had measured the overall results, I decided to break down the happiness increase into separate 2-quiz, 3-quiz, and 4-quiz groups. And here's what I found. This is awesome. I love this. Those who just took 2 quizzes saw a total of a 9% increase in happiness during the 2 weeks in which they applied gratitude to their lives. Those who took 3 quizzes saw a total of 14% increase in happiness during those 3 weeks. And then those who took all 4 quizzes saw a total of a nearly 20%, a 19% increase in happiness during that same 4-week period. I certainly did not expect that I'd be able to measure those kinds of results. In fact, when I first started to download the quiz results, I was kind of irritated. I thought that since a good number of those who agreed to take the quizzes and flip the gratitude switch daily had not done what I'd hoped for, that the end result would be inaccurate results. That minor irritation, of course, gave me an opportunity to flip my own gratitude switch, and that's actually kind of a story worth telling, so let me share it with you. So I was entering data, and I was fuming a little, feeling like way too many people hadn't lived up to the commitment they'd made to do these quizzes. Feeling this frustration, I knew I had to pause for a moment and consider my own flip formula. Here's what it sounded like inside my head. Ugh, I'm a little bugged more people didn't follow the instructions and do all 4 quizzes. Hey, wait, is that a frustration? Oh my goodness, it is. Good. Okay, that means there's something awesome I can look for. I wonder if there are enough people who took only 2 quizzes and took only 3 quizzes and took only 4 quizzes that I can measure their results separately. You know what? If that's the case, then I can see if there was a happiness increase in the 4-week quiz takers that maybe is even more than the happiness increase of the other 2 groups. Man, if that happened, that would be awesome. You know what? I am really thankful that some of the participants didn't take the quiz for all 4 weeks. Man, they provided me with a wider variety of data and a way to possibly even help me even more paint a cool, really rich, full picture of how daily gratitude can impact someone's life. Let me take a moment and just feel how lucky I am that it all worked out this way. Oh, yes. Now I'm excited to look at all this data. I can't wait to find out what it will reveal. Let's go to work. I soon discovered that the groups of 2-quiz, 3-quiz, and 4-quiz takers were pretty equal in number, which worked out perfectly. And of course, the results showed that for each additional week the quiz takers experienced regular gratitude and took the quiz, their happiness level increased by an extra 5% a week. I never would have found that or even thought to look for that correlation without having personally flipped my gratitude switch. That one flip created a whole new dimension to my understanding of the reliability of the flip formula. In short, my experiment empirically proved that the daily conscious decision to apply and use gratitude could increase your happiness and would increase your contentment. Hopefully, at this point, you understand that we need gratitude. But do you fully understand why? I mean, why is it that life can seem so complicated and hard sometimes? What are the influences that are causing us to feel that life is tougher than we imagined or not quite the life we expected or even hoped for? In the next chapter, I will talk about the mistake we often make by choosing to view life through what I call lenses of limitation, which can often cause our view of our reality to be clouded and tricks our mind into thinking things are worse than they really have to be. And I'm also going to talk about some of the constant social influences that seem to be beckoning and tempting us to always put on our lenses of limitation. So let's jump over to the next chapter and talk about the difference between lenses of limitation versus slipping on a pair of gratitude glasses. Chapter 3, Lenses of Limitation versus Gratitude Glasses. Imagine taking off early from work one afternoon to go see the new mega-hit blockbuster movie you've been dying to see. You walk into the theater lobby and you are immediately blasted with the seductive aroma of buttery popcorn. You breathe in deeply, already savoring the next 120 minutes of freedom and escape from real life. You walk up to the ticket counter and request a ticket with money in hand. The ticket price is higher than you expected for a matinee, but you brush it off with the thought, oh well, prices go up from time to time. You walk over to the snack counter and order popcorn, a soda, and a box of Junior Mints. The person working the counter says, do you want your Junior Mints regular or frozen? Wait, you have frozen ones? Awesome, I want those. The nice young man happily hands you your goodies and takes your money, and you are off to the dark, cozy theater for some good, clean fun. You settle into your reclining movie seat for what is sure to be an epic movie performance. The trailers finish and the movie begins, but the opening credits seem a little blurry. You assume this is due to some directorial font choice as you continue to shovel in the popcorn, sip your soda, pop a Junior Mint or two, and wait for the big action sequence at the beginning of the movie. The action sequence begins, but the screen still seems blurry. You rub your eyes and look around to see if anyone else seems to be having the same blurred movie viewing experience you are, and wouldn't you know it, you're all by yourself. That never happens. You keep eating, drinking, and watching, hoping that the blur is just another directorial choice or that it'll clear itself up in another minute or two. It doesn't. Every now and then it seems like the characters pop into focus, but a moment later the screen becomes blurry again. You're naturally a little frustrated. You used up half of a vacation day for this movie. The ticket was more expensive than you'd expected, and now you're sitting here hoping for an epic movie experience but getting only a mediocre one. As you finish the disappointing movie experience and make your way out of the theater, you pass a theater employee who says, please make sure you deposit your 3D glasses in the receptacle just outside the door. What? This movie was 3D? What's the point of this little story? Well, if you were to watch a 3D movie without glasses, you'd probably still understand the movie. You'd be able to follow the plot lines, enjoy the dialogue, and get through it just fine. You may even have a decent time. But ask yourself, how much more enjoyable would that film have been if you realized the movie was 3D and you'd grabbed some 3D glasses on your way in the theater? Wouldn't the movie be better? Wouldn't the visuals come to life? Wouldn't the entire experience be more dynamic, exciting, enjoyable, and vivid? you would have had a completely different experience simply by looking at the same movie through a different set of lenses. This is obviously a metaphor, and it's a metaphor for the way many of us view life. Rather than experience life in its full potential, we view life through lenses of limitation. The movie that is your life can absolutely be experienced in a different way than most of us are currently experiencing it. It could be more vivid, more entertaining, and significantly more enjoyable. The exact same movie you're living right now can be experienced in a different way if you so choose. You just need the right glasses. You need to swap out your lenses of limitation for a pair of gratitude glasses. Most of us are sitting in the 3D movie of life with the wrong glasses on. While we're able to experience much of what it has to offer, we are missing one key component to the experience and are therefore missing out on the full spectrum of joy, humor, love, excitement, and action that this life has to offer. Imagine a glass partially filled with water. With certain lenses on, that glass may either look half empty or half full. But I want you to consider viewing the glass differently. What if the glass isn't half empty or half full? What if the amount of liquid in that glass, regardless of whether it's a drop or a gallon, is simply enough? There may be times when the glass becomes completely drained. Even then, never should that glass be viewed as empty. It should only ever be viewed as refillable. Gratitude glasses allow you to view that glass and its liquid as enough. Heck, you can even view it as plenty, regardless of how much is in the glass. Your gratitude glasses improve your view of the world and allow your life experiences to be filled with more happiness and satisfaction. With gratitude glasses on, it is enough, because it is exactly what it is. The difference between half empty, half full, and enough is quite simply how we choose to view it. Securely insecure.
Everything's amazing right now, and nobody's happy.
That's a quote from comedian Louis C.K., and boy is he right. We have all of this amazing technology at our fingertips. We can build body parts on 3D printers, for goodness sakes. We don't even think twice about astronauts going up into space anymore. Astronauts in space, that is the last century. In a few years, we'll probably all have cars that drive themselves. We have phones that can access any information, anytime, anywhere. And of course, we have multiple ways to instantly communicate with anyone and everyone worldwide, 24 hours a day. Since the advent of the internet and smartphones and social media, there has not been another time in history when communication has been so expansive. However, there's also never been more ways to compare our lives to the lives of others. All of these technological advances and all of these new communication methods have given us more ways than ever to constantly judge whether our life is as good as the next guy or gal's. We now have all these easy and secretive ways to compare ourselves to and judge others. We hide behind our social media profiles and our private browsers. We Facebook stalk people in order to see whether we are as successful or as good as others are in virtually every aspect of our lives. Since you are human, you will no doubt battle with some level of insecurity for the rest of your life. Insecurity seems to be fundamental to the entire human experience. There are all sorts of developmental reasons for how and why we create limiting beliefs about ourselves, and there's all kinds of reasons for the stories we tell ourselves about who we are and what we deserve, but we also happen to be living in a time when technology and media have combined and completely exacerbated the problem. We are constantly bombarded with reasons to slip on the lenses of limitation as we stare at our phone, computer, or television screens and find ways to continuously compare our lives to the lives of others. The new enemy of happiness? Okay, I love social media as much as the next person. I mean, I'm the guy who just checked Facebook, sent out a tweet, and approved some requests on LinkedIn after checking how many YouTube views my new video got, all while posting on Instagram and Snapchatting about the whole thing. I'm serious. Check out my Twitter. I bet I probably just posted @KevinClayson. Probably use the hashtag Gratifuel. Despite my love of all things social media, with all its communicative and emotional benefits, I will admit that it has had, I think, another serious and unfortunate side effect. Not just on me, but I think all of us combined. It's caused us to think that all is well, all the time, with everyone but us. Have you ever noticed how that kind of isolation becomes a numbing agent to joy? I mean, the thought that everyone's life must be boundlessly amazing starts to make us question why our lives aren't going nearly as well, nearly as often as everyone else's. All of our friends seem to be on vacation. Their families appear to be perfect. Their jobs are the best, and everyone is living a supreme existence. We see pictures of all the awesome stuff they buy and all the cool restaurants they go to. We learn about all the fun they're having and all the concerts and sporting events they're attending. We think their marriages are perfect and their children have little angel wings and flutter around playing harps and creating GoFundMe campaigns to feed the homeless. As a parent, chances are you've compared your kids' behavior to the other kids at school or at church or even at the local playground. In the event that your kids acted a little snotty or entitled or bratty, you likely questioned your parenting style and doubted whether you were a good enough parent. You've scoured Facebook for some proof that your friends' children can at times be just as unruly as yours, so you feel a little bit better. In your relationship, social media and modern portrayals of love in movies make little spats and disagreements that you may have with your loved one or a spouse breeding grounds for constant discontentment. Maybe you had a little argument with your significant other and then popped in the movie The Notebook and you wondered why your love isn't like theirs. Or maybe you see a friend post something that their spouse did for them, bought flowers, cleaned the house, made dinner, achieved world peace, whatever, and you thought, why can't my husband or my wife be like that? How about weight loss? It's far too tempting to look at that Instagram post of your friend who recently gave birth and already lost her baby weight and wonder why it seems so easy for her to shed her baby weight when it's just so hard for you to get rid of all your extra pounds. And money? You may look at your neighbor's new car or boat in the driveway, or you watch a YouTube video of their recent 2-month-long vacation in the Italian countryside and think, geez, what are they doing to be able to afford all of this stuff? And what am I doing wrong? After watching everyone's awesome lives unfold on a handheld high-definition screen, you look in the mirror, disgusted by your appearance, depressed by your bank account, and frustrated you aren't a better parent. You may wonder why you just aren't good enough, or at a minimum, why you aren't as good as them. We've all been there. In fact, I would wager that most of us are there right now. It's pretty human to feel insecure. We compare our lives to theirs, forgetting that their portrayal of their reality may or may not be fictitious. At worst, it may be a total fabrication. At best, their life may, in fact, be pretty awesome, but probably not that awesome and certainly not that much more awesome than ours. The real issue is that even if their lives are incredible in every way, their lives shouldn't affect the way we view our lives. Someone else's life, whether real or portrayed as real, shouldn't ever affect you as much as your own life should. In other words, why change your view of your own life based on what you perceive someone else's life to be like? One of the most interesting aspects of social media is that while their life seems awesome to you, they may actually think that their life kind of stinks compared to yours. In fact, it's pretty likely that at the same time you're comparing your life to theirs, they're comparing their life to yours and wondering why your life is so great and theirs is not. You really cannot judge a book by its cover, except for this book, because the cover is awesome and so is the book. Okay, just kidding. Back to the script. You really cannot judge a book by its cover, and social media only presents the cover of everyone else's lives. We only display what we want people to see. We only see the highlight reel of everyone else's life. Our posts show all the good in our lives, but most certainly not all the bad, and more than likely none of the bad.
For example, we don't take a picture of the blister caused by our new shoes. Rather, we take a picture of our new shoes that caused the blister and say something like, check out my new shoes. So cute, right? I had a super great run today breaking them in. Hashtag shoe fetish. Hashtag love to shop. Hashtag blessed. Hashtag beast mode runner. Hashtag fit mom. Hashtag messy her don't cur. We don't take a picture of our steadily growing belly because of how much we eat out. Instead, we post a picture of our meal, conveniently forgetting to mention that it has like 2,700 calories. But you can be sure we will talk about the one thing on the plate that's gluten-free or organic or paleo, making sure to portray just how delicious it is and how socially responsible we are for picking such a meal. We post something like, just tried the new fresh organic place downtown, Amaze Fest. The owner lived in Tibet for like 20 years, super enlightened. Hashtag healthy life, hashtag organic, hashtag foodie, hashtag nom nom, hashtag eat clean. We don't take a picture that shows we can barely fit into our old gym clothes and Snapchat it to the world. Instead, we pick the one selfie out of the 100 we took that makes us look skinny and then use an Instagram filter to make us look even skinnier and probably tanner. Then we post that pic and check in at the gym with some kind of caption like, gym time, hashtag fit life, hashtag gym rat, hashtag flex Friday, hashtag workout, hashtag legendary, hashtag leg day. Come on, you know you've done it. I know I've done it. We also don't take a screenshot of the negative balance in our bank account or our credit card statements totaling thousands of dollars. Instead, we take a picture of the tickets we just purchased or the plane tickets for the flight we just booked to the Caribbean next month, somehow neglecting to post that we can't afford the trip and we're going into more debt just to go on that vacation. We experience a constant barrage of communication through observation from all of the people we follow and like and are connected with through social media, and we actually begin to think that their lives are so much better than ours. It's merely our perception, and it is the perception that is being fed to us through our lenses of limitation that we so willingly slip on as we open up our app or our browser. It's certainly not reality. Celebritizing our lives. Social media, celebrity gossip shows, and magazines like Us Weekly have also made the lives of celebrities far too important to us. For some reason, we really care, and I mean really care, about every single aspect of celebrities' lives. We want to know what they had for breakfast, how many times they went to the bathroom before lunch, what brand of underwear they're wearing, whether they got enough sleep last night, their thoughts on the election, their thoughts on other people's thoughts on the election, and so on and so on. We've idolized them to such an extent that they're basically demigods. And thanks to this celebrity worship, we then try to celebritize our own lives on social media to mask the perceived monotony of our perceived boring and non-fabulous lives. Rapper Macklemore has a song called Light Tunnels that perfectly communicates what is likely the real story behind celebrities in Hollywood. In that song, Macklemore describes what it's like to be at a Hollywood red carpet awards show. He says, and I'm quoting here from the song, "So we Botox our skin and we smile for the camera. Might as well get a new nose while we're at it. This is America and insecurities are fabric and we wear it and we renamed it fashion." In the song, he also uses the phrase, quote, "insecurity dressed up as confidence," which I believe rings so true to our children today. Our children are growing up in a world where they are taught to aspire to be like these images they see on their phones and on their tablets and on the big screen. Images that have been touched up and no longer resemble anything that's even remotely attainable in real life. These are images of people who may end up riddled with addiction and faced with tabloid-worthy scandals. Some of the people we're being taught to worship will even lose their lives to substance abuse or suicide. These are the images our kids and we are bombarded with. And these are the images that are being dangled in front of us as the standard of, you know, true success. They are the new heroes, and that's actually pretty terrifying. The idea that this perceived reality is real life is the perfect example of how our kids are handed a pair of limitation lenses by the world that surrounds them. The infatuation we have with celebrity culture is affecting our kids as they pick up their milk in the lunch line. It's affecting them as they sit in class. It's affecting them as they walk home from the bus stop and take in the world around them. It's kind of like, hey, guilt and shame, my kids are right over here. Can you run over and, you know, make them feel bad about not being as cool or as pretty or as handsome or as rich as these other kids? You know, since they're so young and impressionable, now would be a great time. Can you get on that? Yeah, great, thanks. Our kids need to be allowed to love and live their lives without being assaulted by a constant barrage of other people's opinions and perceptions and standards. Our youth need to learn about how awesome this life can be and how awesome their life is right now, not how it should be based on popular culture and popular trends. As I speak to kids at middle schools and high schools as a paid speaker, and as I volunteer my speaking services to some of the nonprofits that I work with that work with young people, I'm always struck by the massive insecurity that is already setting in at such a young age in this country. Of course, you and I were not immune to insecurity in our youth. However, as an outside observer, it does seem to be more extreme than ever before. And I believe those increased levels of insecurity have been proliferated by the portrayal of everyone else's glamorous reality. When I speak to these young audiences, I share stories about my life growing up. I tell them about all the times when I felt like I'd never get the girl, how I'd never thought I'd be cool enough, and sometimes how I used to walk down the halls and feel like no one could really see me. In relating these tales of adolescent woe, my goal is to help them realize, just as I hope to help you realize, that we all feel this way at some point. But the media tells us we aren't them, you know, celebrities, movie stars, reality stars. So we feel we have no choice but to be insecure about being us. All thanks to the perception created as we gaze through our lenses of limitation. Reality TV. Anything but reality. It's not just social media and our worship of movie stars and pop stars that's causing this whole, you know, isolation that leads to loneliness with a shade of envy way of life. There are other factors at work. I could tell you from personal experience that there's almost nothing more damaging to your sense of self-confidence than is reality TV. This perceived reality is nothing more than scripted tomfoolery. And I think that might be the first time in my life that I've used the word tomfoolery. But it has had a profound impact on our happiness levels. We find ourselves comparing our looks and our lives to those real ones on the screen. We decide we aren't as good looking or as rich as they are, and we choose to become incensed that these idiots who have zero talent have never worked a day in their lives, and yet now they're living a perfect existence. We see their decadent lifestyles, their fame and their fortune, none of which are inherently bad, but still cause us to covet as we wonder why a little more luck couldn't have come our way. The real problem with reality TV and why I think it's led to part of the epidemic of sadness and lack of fulfillment in this world is because we watch reality TV and we assume that it actually, you know, is reality. We treat the quote unquote reality presented to us on these shows in the same way we treat the reality presented to us on social media. The only difference is that reality shows are well funded. They're strategically edited and they're produced by, you know, someone awesome like Ryan Seacrest. I have a friend who appeared on season one of Donald Trump's reality show, The Apprentice. And one of her comments during the season on the show was used as a soundbite in a lot of the show's marketing. And it kind of looked like this. As she was sitting at Donald Trump's table in his Trump Tower penthouse, she said, "I wonder how many deals have been made right here at this table." She later told me that the producers fed her that line in order to capture the exact soundbite they wanted to further their finger-steepling world domination plans. Another friend of mine was a famous villain on ABC's The Bachelorette. If you watch him on The Bachelorette and on that other show, Bachelor in Paradise, or even if you watch his press segment on Dr. Phil, he seems like the rudest, most self-centered jerk in the world. In real life, however, he's an incredibly nice and charitable individual. What you see on TV is rarely what you get in real life. Look, I know I'm being kind of harsh on all this stuff, but none of this is meant as an indictment of social media or celebrities or reality TV, because I love it all. I'm simply acknowledging the negative impact all of that stuff can have on a world whose inhabitants lack the simple truths about flipping the gratitude switch, truths that thankfully you now possess. The negative impacts of social media and celebrity worship and reality TV are merely a representation of the many ways we are unknowingly slipping on a pair of limitation lenses that end up clouding our view of real life, or rather, what life really could be. It's no wonder we feel like we lack the life we really want when we are constantly comparing ourselves to everyone and everything else. Oh, we're not done yet. There's also the nightly Chicken Little report. Right about the time we start to feel really bad about our lives after a day spent reading social media feeds and watching reality TV and reading about the latest vacation of our favorite celebrity, we end up turning on the nightly news, and that's when things go from bad to worse. Now, I'll admit that I maybe would have a more positive opinion of the news if Ron Burgundy from the movie Anchorman was the one reporting it. Stay classy, San Diego. But my reality is that the news, the evening news, newspapers, newsy blogs, and websites that report the news give humans a terrible view of this thing called life. After a few days of reading the newspaper and watching news reports in the evening, it's easy to buy into the fallacy that all humankind is inherently bad, with the exception of a few random outliers. The nightly news programs are perhaps the worst offenders, and maybe the worst propagators of these lenses of limitation. They make it seem as if not a single good thing happens, like ever. The typical nightly news show might as well be called the Chicken Little Report, because the sky is always falling. It seems like everyone is getting murdered, or getting poisoned, or getting robbed, or getting into an accident. Hey, but no worries, right? Because at the end, they'll show you a little bit of sports, a little bit of weather, and a riveting story about the best place in town to go for a slice of pizza. How are we supposed to make sense of it all? I'm not saying we ought to be naive or bury our heads in the sand. Quite the contrary. We need to become keenly aware of what is happening around us every single moment. And then we gotta take that reality and flip tough times into something incredible. We need to look at it all through our gratitude glasses. The pain behind the pretense. The lives that we portray to the world on the internet and the lives we see portrayed all around us are just not real. Life can be hard, and guess what? It's hard for everyone else, not just you and me. People always seem to be kind of shocked when some story does come out about a celebrity who was secretly battling with addiction or depression. We're shocked, not because those ideas are so foreign to us, but because the life that celebrity had been presenting to the world didn't even hint of those kinds of struggles. I used to constantly compare my level of success and achievement with everyone around me. All of that stopped when I started flipping the gratitude switch and thereby slipping on some gratitude glasses. I don't care what your house looks like or how many square feet it has. I'm just thankful I have a roof over my head. Switch flipped. I don't care what your body looks like. I'm just thankful I have two legs that are fully functional that I can use to go for a jog if I want. Switch flipped. I don't care that you have millions of dollars in your bank account. I'm just thankful I have all my needs met. I spend as much time as I want with my family, and I can give to my church and go to Disney World if I want to. I feel blessed beyond measure. Switch flipped. See the idea here? You don't have to compare you to others. You only have to compare you to you. If you want to work to improve some area of your life, let it be your goal to become a better version of the person you already are, all while being thankful that you are who you are in this very moment. You may not have achieved the level of success you want yet, but you can be thankful for every step along the way to where you want to get to. Focus on the gratitude for the tiny bit of progress made, not the deficit of desired achievement you may perceive. I believe that most of our insecurity stems from the perception of lack. But if we become thankful for what we have, then there can be no perceived lack. If there's no lack, then there's no reason to be insecure. Most of the measuring sticks that we use for success and fame and beauty are nothing more than, you know, insecurity dressed up as confidence. Gratitude leads to joy. if our lives aren't as amazing as the lives of our friends, real or cyber, if our reality is far from that of those people on TV and in the movies, and if the world is filled with evil like the news reports say that it is, then it's no wonder insecurity plays a role in causing our view of the world around us to become murky and convoluted. I don't know if the flip formula will heal the country or the world, but what I do know for certain is that this book just handed you a simple way to instantly turn that frown upside down, as well as handing you an invitation to slip on a pair of your gratitude glasses. Flipping the gratitude switch will make you feel better about life as it looks right now. If you're part of the people out there who consider themselves happy already, then this guide to joy and this flip formula will create even more fulfillment, more contentment, and even more happiness than you've ever had before. I guarantee it. It reminds me of a quote by David Steindl-Rast from his book, Gratefulness, The Heart of Prayer. He says, "It is not joy that makes us grateful. It is gratitude that makes us joyful." If you're guilty of posting only the good things or trying to celebritize your life by stretching your truths or even fabricating some of the more dazzling details, and if you're avoiding posting your real reality at all costs, that's okay. Now that you've learned how to regularly flip the gratitude switch, and when you are authentic enough to post about the bad things that can happen, your post will likely be followed by declarations of something good that's embedded in the bad. I sincerely hope those posts, by the way, will be followed up with a hashtag gratifuel. If you still struggle with insecurities of any kind, maybe you can post something inspirational thanks to a newfound understanding of the why that's been fueling your insecurities. Perhaps you can share with your followers, your friends, your connections, how despite your insecurities, you're pushing through and creating a new you, a fabulous and amazing version of yourself that you just adore as you are today. You can help your friends and family see that they're not alone in their insecurities and that by flipping their gratitude switches, they can find love for themselves and their circumstances in a way that will have them looking at life through a brand new pair of gratitude glasses. By the way, I also hope those kinds of posts will be followed up with a gratifuel hashtag. I hope you're ready for it, but just in case you aren't, this may be a good time to pause our regularly scheduled programming for a flipping public service announcement. Warning. Listening to and applying this book may make you become one of those obnoxious, constantly positive Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat users. Side effects may be haters hating, naysayers, poor sports, and generally dissatisfied people littering your timeline and comment threads in order to tell you how obnoxious you are and offering advice on how to re-enter what they refer to as the real world. Proceed with caution. And now, back to our regularly scheduled programming. Okay, you've been warned. So now when you start to post all that really amazing positive stuff, if people want to hate, if people want to say things and tell you that you're obnoxiously happy and you're always positive and tell you that they just can't take it, just give them a hug, give them a high five, tell them you love them, and find a way to serve them. Okay, back to the script. Those who have yet to read or listen to this book may judge you because they don't know what you know. In order to help get them up to speed, go to flipthegratitudeswitch.com and consider buying them a copy of the book. Because, you know, it's really hard to judge someone who's being nice to you and buys you things. If you take these principles to heart and apply them regularly, you will see your life change. And you will begin to view the world through gratitude glasses instead of the lenses of limitation. I still deal with my own insecurities, but I no longer allow them to plague me. You can loosen the grip insecurities have on your life so that they no longer torment you. Or perhaps more importantly, so they no longer define you. If insecurities rule the roost, you are likely viewing the world through lenses of limitation because you're constantly acknowledging your limiting beliefs about who you are or how worthy, or more like unworthy, of love and happiness you think you may be. Lenses of limitation are the reason we feel like we're not enough. They're also what make us feel like we aren't, you know, keeping up with the Joneses, which is why we enter into the unending, frustrating, and exhausting race to keep up, no matter what the cost. Instead of continuing to fight this perpetual and losing battle, imagine slipping on a pair of gratitude glasses and flipping the gratitude switch when those pesky thoughts of, "I'm not enough," start to invade your head. Do you believe you are truly blessed beyond measure?
Well, you are if you choose to be. Slip on some gratitude glasses and let the movie of your life slip into stunning focus. One simple flip of the switch at a time. Chapter 4, The Gratitude Challenge. Side note, this is also the last chapter of the book, so high-five yourself and go high-five a stranger, 'cause you did it. I sincerely hope you've enjoyed this book. I hope the flip formula and the simple ideas of flip the gratitude switch seem easy and clear to you. I want you to know that for me, this book and its message have been the fulfillment of what Napoleon Hill referred to as one's definite major purpose. I didn't know I'd ever really write this book. I mean, it all happened organically. And once I started writing it, it transformed from what I ever imagined it would be. In fact, if you saw my original notes and book outline, it'd be almost unrecognizable. I sincerely tried to let my heart and the inspiration I felt like I was receiving from above lead me through the process of writing and assembling this book. And I hope I've accomplished that in a way that's been beneficial for you. I've been absolutely humbled through this experience. This message is my life's mission. Many of us go through life not ever really knowing if we're having an impact on the world around us. We get up, we go to work, we pay the bills, we try to relax, and we try to be good people. The daily grind doesn't always feel conducive to fulfilling our life's mission. Well, I want you to know that by you taking just a couple minutes a day to feel gratitude, you will totally change the trajectory of your day. And let me tell you what will happen as a result. As you start to change the trajectory of moments and days, you'll start to change the trajectory of weeks and months and years, and it will completely begin helping you feel like a portion of your life's mission is being fulfilled every moment of every day, every time you choose to flip the gratitude switch. That's what happened for me. The fact that you've given me some of your time by listening to and experiencing this book is such an amazing gift, and I just want to say thank you. I'm so honored by the time you took to experience and listen to this book. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for receiving these principles. I sincerely hope they change your life in some small way. Think about what it could mean if you choose to experience gratitude at some point each day for the rest of your life. Imagine what your life would look like if you became an expert at understanding and applying the flip formula. You'd be far less likely to snap at your child or snap at your spouse or shake your fist at that car in front of you. And because you'd be in a different state of mind, you may offer what you think is a meaningless smile to a stranger at the exact moment he or she needs it most, instead of wearing a searing scowl that confirms to those around you that this life is not worth living. What if that stranger was to observe your grin and wonder why you have that smile on your face, and then maybe, just maybe, a tiny one breaks across the stranger's face as well? When he or she smiles, maybe the anger or anxiety this person was feeling breaks down and is replaced with a small light inside. Maybe that light lingers and causes that stranger to offer a tiny smile to another passerby. You may think that flipping the gratitude switch during some tiny moment today won't have some sort of butterfly effect on the world, but it can and it will. I'm so thankful to know the simple but eternal power of gratitude. Now the question for you is, do I roll the dice and see if flipping the gratitude switch changes the world for the better today and trickles a little more love and light on a sometimes dark and dreary world? Or do I hoard my goodwill and stew in my stubborn, selfish ways? I hope you'll join me in saying the following. Today I choose gratitude. Today I choose light. Today I choose to do my tiny part to change the world. If you will do that, you will change the world. We can change the world together. If anything in this book, even just one simple idea, has resonated as truth with you, if any part of the flip formula or the concepts of flip the gratitude switch have benefited and blessed you, I ask you to please share this book and share this message of the life-altering power of gratitude with someone else. Give them a copy of the book. Give them your copy of the book. Consider joining the Flip movement through our private Facebook group at www.facebook.com/groups/theflipmovement.
Read that one more time. www.facebook.com/groups/theflipmovement. If I may extend 3 brief challenges to you, I'll do so with the hope that you will take me up on all of them and that you will watch your life and the lives of those you love most change as a result of what you're about to do. Challenge number 1, the 30-day gratitude challenge. Take the 30-day gratitude challenge by visiting kevinclason.com/challenge. Once there, you can register for the challenge, which is similar to the gratitude experiment that I conducted with my group of volunteers. You can track your progress and quiz scores for the 30-day period, and at the end, when you send in your scores, we'll provide you with a report showing your increased levels of happiness after you flip the gratitude switch at least once a day for 30 days. We'll also share with you the areas of your life that most drastically changed based on your scores. Those who complete all 30 days and submit their scores will receive a special bonus gift. Visit kevinclason.com/challenge for rules and instructions for signing up. Challenge number 2, the hashtag Gratifuel Challenge. This is a big one, even bigger than the last, but it's actually a lot easier. The Gratifuel Challenge doesn't require you to do anything but eat a meal and have a conversation. Here's how the challenge works. Within the next week, have one conversation about gratitude with one person. It only needs to be one conversation and only needs to be done one time in order for you to complete the challenge. Share with that person an epiphany you had about the transformative power of gratitude in your life. Then you'll ask the person to pay it forward by accepting the Gratifuel Challenge him or herself and talk to one other person about the transformative power of gratitude. I've made it simple for you. Just visit kevinclason.com/challenge and print the one-page challenge invitation. Give this piece of paper to the person you share your gratitude story with, and he or she will have all the instructions for how to keep paying it forward. Of course, you will also ask this person to ask another person to pay it forward and keep the challenge going. If you'll do this, we can spark a sweeping global increase in happiness levels simply because more and more conversations about the power of gratitude will be taking place. Let's use gratitude to fuel change and happiness in the world, just as it can fuel change and happiness in you and me. We are going to change the world. For more information, to watch a brief video on how to accept the Gratifuel Challenge, and to play a part in the movement that can quite literally change the world one simple conversation at a time, please visit kevinclason.com/challenge. Challenge number 3, the Flip Challenge. This challenge may be the most important one of the 3 in terms of its ability to spread goodwill and the message of active gratitude as quickly as possible. This one we call the Flip Challenge. In the next 24 hours, perform the flip formula at least one time and record a quick video about what your frustration was, no matter how small that frustration may be, how you effectively used the 4 steps of the formula to flip the gratitude switch and power up with Gratifuel. Then post your video on social media. This video will serve as a marvelous bit of proof for you personally that this formula works, and it will also serve as a beacon of hope to others that this formula could work for them too. Remember, one of the best ways to hold yourself accountable for becoming a frequent and consistent flipper is to share your experiences with others. At the conclusion of your video, challenge and tag by name 3 family members or friends to complete the challenge just as you did. Even if they've yet to read or listen to this book, they'll learn from your video what it looks like and feels like to flip the gratitude switch, and they'll be able to easily share their experience with the world, as well as challenge 3 additional people to do the same. You can even link them to kevinclason.com/challenge, where they can download the flip cheat sheet and watch a brief video on how to take and spread this challenge. If you'll do this, if you'll do the flip challenge and you'll do the 30-day gratitude challenge and if you'll do the Gratifuel challenge, if you'll do all of these, oh my goodness, we can instantly and rapidly spread the power and joy that can come through gratitude, and we are going to infuse the world with massive amounts of awesome right away. By the way, here's another cool thing. If you do the flip challenge and you use the hashtag flip challenge, you'll immediately be entered into a contest to win additional books that you can give away as gifts to those you care about or to strangers who you think might need this message in their lives. So are you ready? Flippers of the world, unite! One final message to you, the listener, and to you, my friend. Thank you for listening to my book. Thank you for being my friend. I truly do feel like we're friends now because we've been through this journey together. Thank you for all you do. Thank you for being you. May God bless you and your family. I sincerely hope to hear from you about the transformative effects of active gratitude in your life. Don't ever hesitate to reach out to me. At the end of this book is all kinds of ways that you can reach out to me. Fast forward to the very end of the last track, and you're going to hear all the ways to connect with me on social media. I want to connect with you so we can change the world together. Allow me to remind you one last time of what the power of gratitude and of flipping the gratitude switch can do for you. My friend, the simple, daily, consistent